بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وبعد Alhamdulillah, welcome to the Zakah seminar for young professionals. Seems like some of you, at least self-defined as being young professionals, so that's fine, inshallah. Everyone is welcome to attend. So I'm going to get straight into it, inshallah, because there was a few minutes delay. So let's begin with Zakah. So what exactly is Zakah? What's the definition of Zakah? Who can tell me? How do you define Zakah? Anybody? Yes. Purification, not so much linguistic, like Islamically. What is zakah? Annual charity. Okay. Anyone else? Better definition or more specific definition?
Obligatory alms.
Obligatory alms. Okay. Or obligatory charity. That's good. So basically, like an obligatory charity, a mandatory charity that every single Muslim needs to give, which is about 2.5% on your wealth every single year. That's, in a nutshell, what zakah is. Now, what are the benefits of zakah? There are a lot of benefits of zakah. We look at it from a different perspective. So first of all, zakah helps those people who are in need. And that's pretty obvious, because when you're giving out charity, whenever you give charity, it's going to help people who are in need. But it also helps to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor. Because if you think about it, in every single community where there are Muslims, the ones who have this amount of wealth are going to be giving it to the ones who don't have this amount of wealth, and now you have an economic redistribution taking place within society. Also, it's going to remove envy and hatred from the poor to the rich. One of the biggest problems that you find in the world, if you look at it from a purely Karl Marx perspective, a Marxist perspective, one of the major causes of revolutions in the world is economic disparities between classes. So what this is going to do is there's, and you find this even in, again, this doesn't mean this theory is correct, but it has some elements of truth to it. You find even today, when it comes to the liberals, the Democrats and the Republicans, you find any type of two extreme parties in any society, you find that the envy and hatred against the rich plays a role in the lack of stability in that society. So what zakah will also do from a sociological perspective, actually remove some of that envy and hatred, because wealth is being redistributed regularly. For people who have the wealth, it's also going to prevent greed and prevent stinginess, because it forces you to give some of your money out. Some people are so stingy, they won't give any charity, no matter what. This mandates the minimum amount of charity that has to be given by every single Muslim. So it gets them into the idea of they have to be giving something, whether they like it or not. This is a requirement, it's not an option. Also, it purifies your wealth. So when you have wealth, if you give your zakah, your wealth is going to be purified, which basically means, it's not like your dollars become cleaner or something like that. It means that there's going to be more blessing in what you have. If you have a lot of money and there's no blessing, if you have, you stole that money, you made that money through, like, you know, drug trade or something like that, there's not going to be much blessing in your money. So when you spend it, you think you're going to get happiness, or you think good things are going to happen with that money. Actually, you find out that people with a lot of wealth, if it's not blessed by Allah, you'll find that wealth doesn't actually help them very much, even though it's a lot in quantity. So it blesses the person's wealth as well. What it also does, this is very important for young professionals in particular, is it teaches you, or actually it pressures you, to invest your money. Because if you're a Muslim and you make money and it just goes in the bank or it sits in cash at home, 2.5% of your wealth is going out every single year. And that's not counting inflation. So add another 2.5% or 3% for inflation. Your money, if it sits in the bank, every year it's going down by about 5%, which means that if you want to just make sure that your money is even staying as a proper savings, you need to be investing that and aim for at least a minimum of about 5% return annually, which is a pretty reasonable return given safe investments and all of that. So it gets people into the mentality of, don't just put your money in a safe deposit box. Don't just put your money sitting in the bank account, because you can't collect interest anyways as a Muslim. But you need to invest that wealth. And when you invest that wealth, what does that actually do? It recirculates wealth within society. So it actually helps society to be more functional, rather than the wealthy people just hoarding onto their wealth and not letting it recirculate within a society. So there's a lot of benefits to zakah, and also has the potential to eradicate poverty from the world if people would pay their zakah properly. So let me give you an example, right? So there are 2,640 people in the world that are billionaires. If you calculate all of their net worth, I think Elon Musk is like number one in the world in terms of his net worth. If you calculate all of their net worth combined, it's $12.2 trillion. This is as of last year's stats. $12.2 trillion. Now, that means if they paid zakat on that money, it would be, anyone calculate in their mind? I don't expect you to. It would be $305 billion of money that would have to be given out to the poor. Now, you calculate that $305 billion every year is going to be distributed to the poor. How many people live below the international poverty line? The international poverty line is $2.15 per person per day. If you have less than that, if you make less than $2.15 per day per person, you're below the international poverty line. There's 897 million people in the world who live under the international poverty line. If you were just to redistribute the $305 billion to the people who are under the international poverty line, what would happen? That's what zakat has the potential to do. And that's only less than 3,000 people paying their zakat. Again, these are not Muslims mostly. So, but if zakat was paid correctly, it would eradicate and eliminate poverty in all parts of the world where Muslims are there. Very simple system. All right, so that's the benefits of zakat, the importance of zakat. Zakat is mentioned in the Quran 82 times. That's a lot. It means it's very important. 32 times it's mentioned alongside prayer. Allah says, and pray, make sure you pray, and give your zakat. So that means zakat is as important as prayer in the life of a Muslim. So it should not be taken lightly. It should be taken very, very seriously. The same way you don't skip your prayers, you don't skip your zakat. The same way you don't delay your prayers and pray late, you don't delay your zakat and be like, ah, I'll just pay it next month. It's not a big deal. No, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And also there's so many warnings from Allah in the Quran about those people who don't pay their zakat. And from the Prophet, peace be upon him, the people who don't pay their zakat, that wealth, that money, used to be in gold and silver form. It will be heated up in fire and it will come and actually will be basically attacking them on the Day of Judgment because they didn't pay their zakat that was due on them. It's a lot of very graphic scenes to warn people about how serious zakat really is. Who needs to pay zakat? Okay, so the people who need to pay zakat, number one, adults who are Muslim need to pay zakat. That means children don't have to pay zakat, even if they have some money. But it also means that a wife is independently responsible for paying her zakat. Children who become adults, they're responsible for paying their zakat. So they can't say, you know what, I thought my dad was going to pay it for me. Or if a wife says, you know, I thought my husband was going to pay it for me. Or if a husband is a little bit lazy and he's like, I thought my wife would pay it for me. Like, it shouldn't be happening because that's a double problem actually. We'll talk about that counseling later on. But everyone is responsible individually for paying their own zakat. Second thing is that you must own the minimum amount of productive wealth to pay zakat. And this is called nisab. Now nisab is a pretty important term. Like some terms you should know in Islam. Like you should know what salamu alaykum means. Like if you just say peace be with you all the time. Like that's an Arabic word that you should memorize, like a statement. You should know what wudu means. We can't be like ablution, you know, all these other weird terms that come out there. Some Arabic terms are worth memorizing. This is one that's worth memorizing. It's called nisab. Because it's so hard to translate in English. Nisab means the minimum amount of productive wealth that you need to pay zakat. It's just hard. Just say nisab. It's a little bit easier. But anyways, nisab means if you have more than this amount of money, you're considered to not be poor, Islamically. And if you have below that, you're considered to not be well off. If you're above that, you pay zakat. If you're below that, you receive zakat. Very simple. That's what nisab is. So if you have over the nisab, you're going to be paying zakat. Now what is nisab? It's 85 grams of gold. If you calculate what is 85 grams of gold as of today, it's $5,917.70. So if you have more than that amount of money at home in cash plus the money you have in your bank and all of the money that you have, then you are above nisab. You are basically in the category of you're supposed to be paying zakat. Okay? But you actually have to have had this last year as well. So if you had this minimum amount, the nisab, last year which is a lunar year, which is 354 days. Like Ramadan to Ramadan is 354 days. It's not 365 days like the solar calendar. So if you had this amount, if you had over 85 grams of gold last year, and you have over 85 grams of gold this year, you must pay zakat on the amount of money that you have right now. So if you have $10,000 right now, and you had $6,000 last year, you pay 2.5% on $10,000 as a requirement. Okay, so that's the way it works. And you have to have full ownership of that wealth. Meaning, if let's say you have stocks which are not vested in your company, you don't have to pay the zakat for that. If you have RSUs, reserve stock units, for example, as part of compensation of your company, but they have no market value because your company is not publicly traded yet, or the company has not been sold, and they have no value, you're not able to sell them to anybody, then you technically don't own them, they don't have any value, so therefore, you don't have full ownership of them. So whatever you have full ownership of in terms of your wealth, you will be paying zakat on that. So these are the requirements for paying zakat. Next, how do you calculate your zakat? Okay, the first thing you do is, let's say the first time in your life, you are supposed to mark the first day you meet the minimum amount. So let's say, for example, let's say Yusuf is 9 years old, right? How old are Yusuf? You're nine? He's nine. So he's nine, and let's say he starts programming, let's say he starts doing some coding, and he's making like JavaScript games and apps, and he's selling them on an app store somewhere, and he starts making money. And now he just made $500, and he made another $500, and his friends are buying all these games, and he's up to $5,300 in his account because he's been selling his apps, and he's 14 years old now. Did he meet the minimum threshold yet? No. Let's say now he sells the next app for $500, and he just gets to $5,950. Is he above? He's above. The moment he gets above, he's gonna put that date in his calendar. He's gonna open up his calendar, he's gonna write down, this is the first time in my life I got above Nisab. I'm almost at $6,000. He's gonna write that date down, the Islamic date or the whatever the date is, and now he's gonna wait 1 year, and now he's gonna keep on coding, he's gonna take some of that money, he's gonna invest it in the stock market, and he's gonna buy, you know, some company. You said, what company are you gonna buy? I'll advise you, buy Apple. So he's gonna buy Apple computers, and all of a sudden that's gonna hopefully go up. And the next year, 354 days later, now he's still above 85 grams of gold. So now let's say he has $9,000 in his account. Because it's been 1 year, he's gonna pay on exactly the same date of last year, 354 days later, he has to pay zakat 2.5% on whatever money he has in his account. Is that clear? That's what's supposed to happen. The majority of young professionals, they never did that. Because they probably were never taught that this is what you're supposed to do in zakat. How many of you were not taught this and you didn't do it? It's okay. This is the problem. This is the problem because zakat education, for some reason, is either it's not taught very well or people don't show up to it. And they should show up to it. So anyways, that's what's supposed to happen. So after 1 year lunar year, you pay 2.5% on your savings. Now let's say you're like, well, you know what? I don't remember what that date was. We go back and you check your bank statements and you say, okay, when was that date when I started? You say, but I haven't paid in like 2-3 years. What do I do? Back pay for those years. And you pay. And you say, well, you know what? That date that Yusuf first made his money, he's like, that's not a very good date. It's like, it would be so much easier for me to just pick a date that's like Ramadan the first, or you know, the day of Eid, or the day of Hajj, or something like that. It's easier because Islamic lunar calendar. So you can recalculate, he can recalculate his date by paying early 1 year. So he's like, you know what? My zakat date is coming up in 2 months, but it's the first of Dhul-Hijjah, right? Hajj is coming up. You know what? My zakat is due in 2 months, but I'd rather recalculate my date so every year I'm just paying on the first of Dhul-Hijjah. So 1 year he just pays early, and the next year his new date now is the first of Dhul-Hijjah. Problem solved. And then it's simple, you just simply keep paying every single year like that. And that solves the problem, all right? You should not delay your payment of zakat even a day because it's like a prayer, all right? You're sinful if you delay even a day. But can you pay early? Can you pray early? Can you pray before Zuhr time? Can you be like, you know, 8 a.m., I'm gonna take a nap. Let me just pray my Zohar right now. Can you do that? No, you cannot. But can you pay your zakat early? Yes, you can. If there's an emergency, disaster, and somebody says, listen, we need money. There's an earthquake that happened somewhere. We really need some funds right now. So you know what? I am a charitable person. I already gave out a lot of charity. Zakat is coming up. Let me give this with the intention of my zakat. So you give it with the intention of your zakat. When your due date comes, you recalculate how much money did you give out for a zakat. Add it back to the amount of money that you have. Do the 2.5%. Were you under or were you over? If you were under, you pay the remainder of your zakat and your zakat is fulfilled. So you can pay early, okay? At least like a year early. Don't pay like 10, I'm paying 10 years early for zakat. Never have to pay for the next 10 years. Don't do that, okay? But like 1 year early, you can pay. All right, what types of wealth is zakat due on? You do not need to pay zakat on personal items. So like, let's say furniture. You have sofas in your house. You have like an Italian, you know, cross-stitched, imported from like Sicily, a sofa that's like $7,000. And you only have $2,000 in your bank account. You're like, man, that's a $7,000 sofa and $2,000, I'm above nisab. But you only have, I don't know why you have that sofa anyways, but regardless of that, that's another counseling issue. But you only have $2,000 in your account. Do you have to pay zakat? No, because you do not need to pay zakat on your personal items. Furniture, you don't factor it in. Your clothing, you got some really fancy brand clothing, you don't need to factor it in. Vehicles, even if hypothetically, you have a Ferrari, right? And you only have $4,000 in your, let's say you have $20,000 in your bank account, and you have a Ferrari, you're gonna pay 2.5% on your $20,000, you're not gonna factor in your Ferrari. Why do you have a Ferrari? No idea, right? Counseling issue again. But the point is, it doesn't matter what you own. So if you own wave runners and jet skis and ATVs and all sorts of recreational vehicles or whatever it may be, and you're not trying to sell them, it's really for your own personal use, you don't have to factor that in for zakat. All the books that you have, if you've got a lot of books like me, weapons, you know, you have like a gun collection, or in the past people used to have different weapons and they were very expensive and all that, you don't have to factor all those things because they're for your personal use. You're not selling them. All right, but zakat is due on four things. Number one, the currency, meaning the money that you have, a cash, bills, all of that, and your bank accounts. Number two, your merchandise that you have for sale if you own a business, and your investments, and agricultural products if you're a farmer. Any farmers in here? No, I've never had a farmer in a zakat workshop. So we're gonna skip that entire part, which is actually like takes about 2 hours to go into detail. So that's great. Livestock. Again, if you own, does anybody own 40 sheep by chance? Nobody? Or I never had someone. Good. I'm going to skip another 2 hours worth of zakat. So this is going to become a much shorter seminar. Because anytime you go and you study Islamic law in like a seminary or an Islamic university, guess what? More than half of zakat is on agricultural products and livestock. Because that's what it used to be in the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him. This was a major form of their wealth. Now we can skip that part and only focus on the first two. That is, currency and bank accounts, merchandise for sale and investments. That's all that's really relevant today. All right, so wealth in the form of money, currency and accounts. You're gonna go and you're gonna calculate all the coins and the bills and the checks that you have written to you and your bank accounts, savings accounts and checkings accounts and everything like that. And you're gonna calculate all of that, you have to pay zakat on it. Any money that you set aside, you say, I'm setting this money aside for marriage. When I get married, I plan on having like a $20,000 beach wedding in Santa Barbara, and I put that in a special envelope and it's under my bed. That money is reserved for when I get married. Too bad, it doesn't matter. You still have to pay zakat on that money. I hear this all the time. I say, but I have money for school. You know, I have money that I'm saving up because I wanna be paying my school fees and I have so many fees coming up. I understand that. But that's your money right now and you haven't spent it yet. You wanna prepay in advance? Prepay the money to the school, it's not your money anymore. Now you don't have to pay zakat on it. But if it belongs to you, you have to pay on it. If you say, well, I plan on going for Hajj, I'm saving up for Hajj, and I should be able to go within the next 9 months. But you don't know if you're gonna go within the next 9 months. So whatever money you save, you still have to pay zakat on your money because it's still your money. It doesn't matter if you've intended to save it. It doesn't matter if you put it in a safe and you buried it, you know, underground, under your house. You still have to pay zakat on that money. Business assets. If you own a business, like let's say Yusuf is coding games, and he's already coded a few games, and they're for sale, and no one has bought them right now. And those games are listed for $500 each. That is merchandise for sale. He has to pay zakah on the value of that because he knows that the value of that game is probably going to have a market value of $500. He needs to sell it. Inventory. If you have inventory, let's say you have you sell products and you have stuff in the back, and it's not for sale right now, but it's in your warehouse, and it can be, it could be for sale. You have to pay zakah on that. Raw materials that you have for producing something that's going to be for sale, you're supposed to pay on that as well, with few exceptions. Then this is if you own like a business. Receivables and currency. Receivables are, you know, oftentimes when you do business, you sell something to people and you say, you know what, you can pay me within 30 days or you can pay me within a week or something like that. You know this person's going to be paying you within that amount of time usually. So you have to pay on the receivables because you already sold the product. So you're not considering it merchandise that you're going to be paying zakah on, but this person owes you money and they're going to pay you within a few days. You have to pay on your receivables. You also have to pay on the currency that you have in your bank account. So let's say Yusuf's doing all these coding, right? So he's got like three games listed on his app. So that's $500 each, that's $1,500. He's going to pay zakah on that. And he's got $6,000 in his bank account for all the money that he sold. His business has both of these things. You add them together and you're going to be paying zakah on both of them. What he's not going to pay zakah on, what you're not going to pay zakah on if you have a business. Fixed assets. So let's say Yusuf buys a brand new laptop to do his coding. The laptop, let's say he buys a super crazy expensive laptop. It's like $5,000. And he's got the super mouse and he's got the big screen and everything. You do not have to pay zakah on that because that is being used for the business. It's not something he's selling. So it's like personal use, but for the business. Machinery, you don't need to pay zakah on. Equipment, you don't need to pay zakah on. Payables and uncollectible debts also, you don't need to pay zakah on them. So you can subtract your payables, things you need to pay. So let's say he bought the laptop, but he hasn't paid them yet. He's going to pay them in a month. But he already received the laptop. He has to pay that. So he can subtract that from the amount of his zakah. Uncollectible debts. He knows there's a few customers that won't pay him. They're just, they've been waiting. They're just not paying. They say, oh, I don't have the money. I don't know when I'm going to have the money. You don't have to pay on those. So receivables are different from uncollectible or likely uncollectible debts. Next category is investments. So if you purchase anything with the intention, primary intention of eventual resale, zakah is due, right? So let's say, what does that mean? Like, let's say I buy this phone, okay? I buy this laptop. This is for my personal use. Am I eventually going to resell it? Yeah, I mean, when it gets old and I want to buy another laptop, I'm going to resell it. But was my primary intention of buying the laptop to resell it, or primary intention was to use it for myself? Use it for myself. But if I have a business and I buy 5 laptops a month and I use them a little bit, but I keep on selling them whenever I get a chance to people and make good money, amount of money from it, that is a business that I'm doing. Every single one of those laptops, every single one of those phones that I'm buying, I have to be paying zakah on because it's merchandise and it's business that I'm doing. Basically, that's why I bought it. I bought it to do business, even though I used it a little bit. My primary intention of buying it was for resale. So that's what an investment is. Let's say you buy a vintage car. Let's say you buy an old Ferrari from, I keep using Ferraris. Let's say you buy an old Lamborghini, let's mix it up. Buy a Lamborghini from the 1960s. Okay, like an old vintage Lamborghini, and you're like, your intention could potentially be one of two things. I like vintage Lamborghinis, I like old car. I don't, I'm just giving you a hypothetical. I like newer cars. But anyways, buy a vintage Lamborghini, I like the old style cars, they're just so cool, and this is the car that I want to drive, and I work on it every weekend, and I just enjoy that. Is it personal use or is it investment? Personal use, you don't pay zakah on it. If I switch my intention, I said, man, these old Lamborghinis, I know people that will pay an arm and a leg for this. I'm gonna buy one of these, and I'm gonna keep it in my garage, keep it super clean, keep waxing it and everything, and I have a feeling in 5 years I could sell this thing for double. Intention is personal use or investment? Investment. I need to pay zakah every year of those 5 years. on the potential market value. So I go check, hey, what could I possibly get for it right now if I were to sell it? You got to pay zakat on the market value of that car every single year because my intention is different. So your intention can be personal use. Your intention can be investment. And guess what? Allah knows your primary intention. So you need to figure out what your real intention is, and then you need to decide what you're going to do. Stocks are in the same category. Stocks are investments. You buy them. Most people buy stocks for the purpose of resale, hoping that the stock goes up, and then they're going to resell it. So you got to pay zakat on your stocks at the market value. So you're going to pay on the market value every year on all of these investments. Now, there's some, I'll just mention this. There's some opinions which I think are strange. One opinion is that they say stocks are, you pay 10% of the profit that you make, capital growth that you make on the stocks. This is analogous to farming. Because if you were a farmer, which none of you are, but if you were a farmer and you had crops and your land is naturally irrigated through rain, which Allah is sending down for you, and you don't need to put any work into it, you're supposed to pay 10% of your crops. We're not going to cover this today, but I'm just giving us a side notion. So therefore they say stocks are like that. They're growing, like the farm is growing. I'm like, that's like the worst analogy ever. So that's a very weak opinion. I really suggest you don't ever follow that. The second opinion is that you pay not on the market value of the stock shares, but you pay as if you're an owner of that company. So you say, like, you know what? If Yusuf buys 10 shares of Apple Computer, it's like he's a part owner of Apple Computer. So what they're going to do is they're going to look at how much cash they have, how much profit they're making, how many vehicles they have, how many trucks they own, how many warehouses they own, and they're going to look at which are the zakatable parts of the business, the non-zakatable parts of the business, and then he's going to pay as if he's a partner. But in reality, that's not how the open stock market works. Stock market generally works. He's not an actual owner. He owns these shares. Yes, in one sense, he's like a part owner of like 1/1,000,000,000th of a company or something like that. But in reality, he has no say in what's really going to happen in the business. He has no actual vote. He has no actual, you know, able to dictate what happens. So he's not really a partner. So when it comes to stocks that you're buying on an open market, they should be treated as merchandise. If you own a company, like let's say you own 10% of Apple Computers and you're a major shareholder, you're like Warren Buffett, and you go in and you buy out a company like a major shareholder and you actually have a real influence over what happens in the company, then it makes sense to say I'm an actual partner and I'm going to be paying like an actual partner. That's going to be in a different scenario than people who just buy a few shares in the stock market. Okay, and then there's access restricted investments. Like for example, if you have an IRA account, an individual retirement account, or you have a 401k account, a 403b account, or something like that, you have access restrictions on those accounts, which basically means, well, I can't pull out the money whenever I want. But the question is, did you voluntarily give up your ability to access that money? Yes, you did, for stock benefits. For tax benefits. Did you, is the person who is managing your portfolio inside the 401k or the IRA, do they have the potential to have access to switching from one stock to another stock or something like that? Absolutely, they have access to it. If you needed incidental access because you got sick or you needed to buy your first house or something, would you get, let's say you have $300,000 in your 401k. And I get this scenario all the time, by the way. Okay, I have somebody comes to me and says, I only have $3,000 in my bank account, so I can't pay zakat this year. Why? How much do you have in your 401k? In my 401k, I have $900,000. But I only have $4,000 in my bank account, and therefore I cannot pay zakat. And if I tried to pay zakat, I wouldn't even have enough money to pay zakat. So therefore, I don't have access to that money. So it's as if it's like it's not mine. I said, let me tell you something. I know for sure that if you lost all your money in your bank account, if you spent all $4,000 in your bank account, you would not become homeless because you will get access to your 401k. It's not like that the government's going to be like, the financial company's going to be like, sorry, you're going to be living in a tent with the $900,000 in your 401k. That will not happen. you get access to your 401k based on certain criteria and factors in exceptional circumstances, like important medical bills, buying your first house, switching, transferring over to jobs, doing a rollover, whatever it may be. So you are still rich. This is not an excuse to be like, well, I don't have access to the money. I hear this all the time. I don't have access to my money, so therefore, I should not have to pay zakat on it. This is a very weak opinion, and I don't recommend you. I'm going to take questions, inshallah. I'm going to take questions soon. All right, so you still pay, and you should be paying on the market value. Now, there's three opinions on this. Number one is that you can deduct the potential penalties that you'd have to deduct if you're going to access it. My view is that you shouldn't do it. But I wrote an article on it on my website, asktheScholars.com, explains it in more detail. The second is that you can deduct the potential tax that you would have to be paying on it. But my view also is that you should not be doing that, because your growth is not going to be based upon those things. All right, anyways, then you have gold and silver. So gold and silver, people used to have gold coins and gold bars, and still do maybe sometimes. You got to pay zakat on that. But what about jewelry? What about jewelry that, you know, you're wearing? Again, men cannot wear gold, by the way, so it should not be for men. But for women in particular, scholars have differed. There are three main views, and they're all pretty strong views in Islam. One of them is you have to pay zakat on all your jewelry every single year. This is the Hanafi madhab position. Second view is that you do not need to pay zakat on any of your jewelry, and this is the Shafi'i position, and some other scholars. And then there's a third view, which basically says, if you're using that gold regularly throughout the year, you don't need to pay zakat on it, because it's like it's for personal use. But if you're sitting with all this gold and it's sitting in a safe deposit box, and it's like your emergency fund in case you need to sell it or something like that, then you need to pay zakat on that, because it's more like a savings than it is a personal use. You're like, you know, this was passed down to me from my grandmother, from her great-grandmother, and I'm planning on passing it down to my grandkids. But before I become homeless and have to sleep in a tent, yeah, I would sell this gold. That is like your savings, right? So this is the third view. I slightly lean towards the third view, theoretically, like intellectually, but I think if you're well off, it's safer to just pay on the jewelry every single year. It's just a safer thing to do, and it's better for the poor. And you're supposed to be giving more charity than just zakat anyways. So hopefully you're giving enough charity that offsets the amount of your jewelry. Okay? That's my general view. All right, next is debts and loans. So long-term debt. Debt means you owe somebody money. And loan is, I'm using it this way. Loan is when you loan somebody money. They borrowed money from you, so you gave it to them. So long-term debts are not subtracted from zakat. So if you have $10,000 in your bank and you are leasing a car, or you're financing a car, let's say, and you're paying it off, and you still have $30,000 to pay off on your car, can you be like, you know what? Well, I have $10,000 in my bank and I'm minus $30,000 on my car. Can you people please give me zakat so I can pay off my car? On my Mercedes? No, you cannot receive zakah to pay off your Mercedes just because you have a debt on it, right? So you cannot subtract long-term debt, not student loans and not vehicle loans and not home loans and all of those other things. The only debt that you can subtract is debt that is due right now. So if you had a car payment that was due yesterday and you haven't mailed a check for it yet, you subtract that specific payment for the month that was due right now. So if it's due right now and you're intending to pay it off, then you can subtract it. That's the way it works. When it comes to loans, if you loan somebody money, let's say Mariam wants to start her own business as well. She wants to sell art online. And she says, you know what, Dad, I need $1,000 to start my business. So I say, okay, I'll loan you this $1,000. Now if I give her this loan, okay, the question is, does she pay zakat on it, or do I pay zakat on it? So the question is going to be, who pays zakat on it, and how and when? So the thing is, if I can collect this money back at any time, because I know she didn't spend the money yet, and I'm like, I need the money back right now, sorry daughter, taking it back from you, I will be paying zakat on it. If I cannot collect it because she put the money into her website and now she doesn't even have the money, and I'm like, can I get my $1,000 back? She said, sorry Baba, didn't sell any art today and I don't have any money and sales are just not doing well. I don't have access to that money. So I loaned her money out of goodwill. Obviously, I would not loan my own daughter money to give it to her. But if I give it out of my goodwill, and then what happens is I'm not collecting interest on it. And let's say she pays me back 5 years later. I was trying to do an act of charity. I was trying to do something good. But now I'm being penalized for having to pay 2.5% every single year. And I don't get access to invest that amount of money myself and break that 2.5% threshold for myself. So I'm not going down in money. That wouldn't be fair. So there are three scholarly opinions on debts and loans, on whether they're to be paid or not. This is my view, and this is a view that I feel strongly about, because I think it would not be fair if you had to pay zakah on the loans that you gave out that you cannot recollect right now, but you're having to pay zakah on them. The guy's like, I'll pay you later, I'll pay you, you know, when I get the money. I don't know when I'm going to get the money. That wouldn't be fair. So that's when it comes to debts and loans. Distribution of zakah. Who can zakah be given to? The eligible recipients of zakah. Number one, the poor and needy. So who are the poor and needy? Generally, people who are below nisab, below the minimum amount threshold. Those are people who can receive zakah. Or you can actually look at the poverty line. So let me give you some stats on the poverty line right here. In the United States, the family poverty threshold in 2023 was $13,788 per year for a single individual under the age of 65, $27,479 for a family of four with two children under the age of 18. All right, so this is just approximate poverty guidelines. If somebody's living in there, most likely they're qualified to receive zakat, even if for some reason they're above nisab. If they're below nisab but they're way above this, you probably want to prioritize giving the zakat to people who are both below nisab and below this poverty threshold, if you have the ability to distribute it to them. Number two, people employed to collect or distribute zakat. This was mostly during the time of when there's a khalifa and there's an Islamic state, but I'm not going to get into the details of this because this could potentially be abused by saying, you know what, I will redistribute zakat on your behalf. You can give it to me and I have some friends, but I'm going to take my 20% cut because according to the Quran, I am employed to distribute zakat on your behalf. So you got to be very careful about that, but I won't go into too many details. Number three, people whose hearts need to be softened towards Islam. This was in the beginning of Islam, during the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, when they would give zakat to people who were either enemies of Islam or new to Islam, and they needed to kind of, you know, be pacified in their hearts because they were wavering because Islam was not very powerful. When Umar ibn al-Khattab became Khalifa, he said this doesn't apply anymore in our circumstances, in our time. So majority of scholars went with this opinion, but it can potentially, you know, play a role. Number four, slaves who are able to purchase their freedom. Does anybody know any slaves by chance? No, so we don't know any slaves, so this doesn't really apply today. Number five, people who are in debt. In debt for their Mercedes? No, people who are actually in debt, like they really need to pay off their debts, those, and they need to pay it off now, those people can receive zakat. Because what you do is, you look at how much money you have, and you subtract the amount of debt you have, you're eligible for zakat. Number seven, for the defense of Islam and Muslims. So to actively support like jihad or something like that in the past. Now it's hard to make that determination nowadays, but that's the way it was, like soldiers and stuff like that, fighting for the cause of Islam. And number eight, someone who doesn't have access to their wealth, like someone, a traveler that is stranded, and they have money, but they don't have access to their money because they're in a foreign land, right? That rarely applies today. There's always, what is that called, like MoneyGram, and what's the other thing where you send money? Western Union. And now you got cryptocurrency, you got so many other ways to transfer money over. All right. Distribution of zakah. You cannot give your zakah to someone who possesses the nisab unless they're really in need. Let's say they have like 27 children, right? And like, I think Sheikh Muhammad, his family actually had 27 children. So it's pretty interesting. But anyway, or like I think he had more than 27. Anyways, the minimum amount, if they have above it, you're not supposed to give it to them. So if they're well off, you can't give it to them. I just had somebody ask me recently, like literally yesterday, this was a question. So you know what? I want to give my zakat to somebody and she's really poor and she just doesn't have any money and she's struggling. Can I give my zakat? But she does have like an entire safe deposit box full of jewelry, but she's saving that for her children and she doesn't want to spend any of that. What's the answer? No, you cannot. I'm sorry, as sentimental as that jewelry is, she needs to sell some of that jewelry and take care of her own needs. Right? You can't imagine someone like homeless in a tent and sitting there and they're like, but this jewelry is going to be going to my grandchildren. I know it's sentimental, but no, that's not the way it works. All right, you cannot distribute zakat to another cause, even if it's on behalf of the poor. So the Hanafi position, which I think is a safer view to try your best to follow, even if it's not intellectually the strongest position, is you're supposed to make sure that money goes to the poor and not a cause for the poor. So for example, say we're building a hospital for poor people, and poor people will benefit from the hospital. But what if rich people also benefit from the hospital? You can't do that. Also, let's say you say we only allow poor people to come into the hospital. Okay, I get it, but you spent $10 million building the hospital for poor people. If you would have distributed that $10 million to the people themselves, would they have waited for the hospital to be built, or they would have bought food for their family? They would have gotten, you know, started a business. They would have done something right now with that money. So the general principle which should be followed, it's not a strict principle, but let's just say it's a general principle, is that you're supposed to kind of give your money into the hand of that person at some capacity. Like it should reach them directly rather than indirectly. So you don't use your zakah to build roads and you're like, you know, the poor people will benefit from this freeway connecting to cities. I know it'll benefit them. Yeah, it'll benefit them, but that's not the way that zakah is supposed to be working. You cannot give zakah to non-Muslims because they don't pay it either. You cannot give zakah for something where any benefit comes back to you. So if you give zakah to the masjid, and then the masjid has air conditioning on, and then you benefit from the air conditioning, you're giving it back to yourself. You cannot give zakah, you say, you know what, there's this guy who works for me. Let's say Yusuf, is working for a computer company, and he's poor. And they say, you know what, I know Yusuf is poor. I'm going to pay his salary from my zakat money. You can't do that because he's working for you. You can't be like, he's gonna fix my wall, he's gonna fix my toilet at home, and I'm gonna pay him zakat money. No, you took a benefit from that. So you cannot have any benefit returning back to you. Now there's another scenario that's we gotta be a little bit careful about. Let's say I own a pharmacy and I sell medicine. And I say, you know what, I know there's a lot of poor people who need medicine, and they really need, they if I gave them money, they would definitely buy some medicine. So you say, you know what, you come to my pharmacy and I will use my zakah money to buy the medicine and give you the medicine that you need. Allowed or not allowed? Not allowed. Why is it not allowed? It's one simple twist here. Because you're buying the medicine from my pharmacy and I'm locking you into buying it from me. If I gave you the money, so you could buy it from anywhere you want. And say, you know what, the other pharmacy, it's half price. No, but I'm using my zakat to buy medicine for you. What happened? You got a personal benefit. There's a conflict of interest. It's very important for zakat organizations in particular to eliminate conflict of interest whenever they can. Because it's very easy to sometimes accidentally get locked into a conflict of interest. Let's say, for example, I'm teaching Islamic classes. Let's say I take this zakat seminar and I put it onto Mustafa's Islamic University online. And I say, you know, I know I'm selling it for $10. And I know there's someone that says, I cannot afford it. I say, don't worry. I've collected zakah for people who are redistributing, and I will use zakah funds to help pay for the course so that you can learn about zakah because that's a need in your life. But what am I doing? I'm locking them into only accessing my course, not anyone else's course. Someone else could be selling the same zakat course for $10 or for $5 or $20, better quality, whatever it is. I cannot have this conflict of interest where I'm locking them in with my own zakat. And that's where we need to be careful, okay? Because this happens sometimes purposely, And sometimes organizations will accidentally do it without realizing that they're doing it. Next, you cannot give zakat to a person who's capable of working but doesn't want to do it out of laziness. To a person who's literally, they could just go and find a job, but they're like, you know what? It's just so much more convenient to watch Netflix all day long. No, you don't get zakat. You need to get out there and you need to go get a job. People who are lazy do not receive zakat. And this is not like some random, this is not some new thing I made up. This is explicitly mentioned in books written 1300 years ago. All of them. It says straight up, anyone who's lazy, doesn't want to go out and get a job, do not give them your zakat. I was like, man, that's awesome. Like Imam Abu Hanifa was writing this because they had this problem. This is a universal problem that used to happen. Lastly, to pay for government taxes. You cannot say, I pay my taxes and therefore I don't have to pay zakat. I've heard this. I've even heard some guy who is claiming to be a scholar saying that this is his opinion. Anyways, why? Because zakat, your taxes are not being spent for the most part on zakat eligible categories. So yeah, it's going to, is your zakat, is your, are your taxes going to, how much percentage are going to non-Muslims who are Muslims who are in need? What's the percentage? Like almost nothing, right? So therefore, paying your taxes has nothing to do with zakat. You still have to pay zakat. That's another point. I'll mention one more point here. Should you claim a tax, what do they call it, tax break? Should you claim tax breaks for giving zakat? Absolutely. Why in the world would you not? So if you give your zakah, you should claim it on your tax return and say, look, I gave this much charitable donation, a tax deduction. You should definitely use your zakah as tax deductions unless you gave it in cash, you know, or for whatever reason. So you should. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, if you want to be extra pious, you can say the tax deduction money that I got, I'm going to redistribute that back in charity. But as long as the reason why you gave zakah was not to get the tax deduction is incidental to your purpose behind why you gave zakat, there's nothing wrong with even you keeping that money. Okay. What else do I have? Distribution, I'll go through this really quickly. You can distribute to any one of these categories however you want. Family is a priority. So if you have family members who are poor, except your parents and grandparents and your children and grandchildren, you cannot give zakat to them. Why? Because you're obligated to spend on them. So if they're in need, so I get asked this all the time. It's like, do I have to spend on my parents? Let me clarify the answer for you. Only if they're in need. Be like, you know what? My dad wants to buy a Ferrari. Keep using Ferraris. Somebody give me another car. Mustang? Okay. My dad wants to buy a Mustang and, you know, he wants me to buy it for him. And like, I'm still trying to build up my wealth and everything. And he's got enough money, but he wants me to buy it for him. Do I have an obligation to buy it for him? No, I don't have an obligation. But if my dad becomes poor and he can barely pay his expenses, I have an obligation. I must pay for him and I cannot use zakat. But my brother, on the other hand, he can receive zakat because I don't have an obligation to take care of him. Unless, you know, it's like a much smaller obligation of like, you're supposed to take care of your family if they're in need, but I'm allowed to give my zakat to him or my sister or whatever it may be. So family is number one priority. You can give your zakat to them. And then giving zakat in your local area is also a priority unless there's emergency elsewhere. You can give it directly or you can give it to someone to give it to them on your behalf. So there's organizations that do that or individuals that do that. When you give your zakat, very important, you have to have the intention that it's zakat. You can't be like, you know what, hey man, I just wanted to help you out, here's $100 in charity. And then 1 month later, you're like, oh man, my zakat is due. I should go back and backdate and count that $100 I gave to that person. You cannot backdate your intention. So, whenever you give zakat, you have to have the intention of giving your zakat. You can pay in advance, but you can't backdate it. You are not required to notify the person that you're giving it to that the money is zakat. So let's say somebody you know that they're not well off and they need the money. And you're like, if you told them this is zakat, they would feel embarrassed. They're like, you know, it kind of feels a little bit, it's like it messes with your honor, you know. May Allah protect us from being in that situation. So You don't have to tell them it's zakah, but you need to have the intention in your heart that this is zakah. And then you say, you know, I just wanted to give you this gift. And you give them like a gift card where they can buy whatever they need, a grocery store gift card or something like that. And you say, I just, you know, you've been a really good friend for so many years. I just wanted to give you this gift. And you don't have to tell them it's zakah, but in your heart, you knew it was zakah and you knew they're eligible. That counts as your zakah. You can distribute zakah in any form of wealth as long as it's truly helpful for the individual. So that's the medicine example that I give, right? So that when you were thinking about, you know somebody needs this medicine. You could give them money, you could give them medicine. And you're like, this medicine is really required for them. You can go ahead and give them the medicine. What you can't do is be like, you know what? I have this really nice laptop that's 2 years old and I've been wanting to get rid of it for quite a while now. And selling it on Craigslist, it's going to take me like a month. It has a value of about $600. I know this other guy has a need for a laptop. Let me just go ahead and give him the laptop. How much, if you were to hand the person $600, would they have bought this laptop or not? Probably not. That's your criteria. If you were to have handed $30 to this person and you know that they need this medicine and they would have went and bought this medicine because they're in pain, they need this, then you can give them the medicine. If you know that if you handed them the money, assuming that they're a responsible person, they would have gone and bought the medicine, you can give it to them. Assuming that they wouldn't, then you don't give them that specific thing, right? And that's why sometimes it comes back down to if they're a responsible person. So a lot of people who are in need, they may not be so responsible. If you hand them $1,000, and they need to pay off their utility bill, and they need to pay their rent, and they need to buy some medicine, they need to buy some food, they may go out and blow that money before they even pay their bills. And that's a problem. In that situation, and you know that they're not responsible with money, can you pay their other needed expenses for them? Absolutely. Pay their rent, pay their utility bill, buy them medicine, buy them whatever they need so that they're not wasting that money. What you don't do is you don't take it one step further and you start giving them your own laptop. You'd be like, you know what? I need to get rid of this $600. I don't need to put it on Craigslist. I don't need to put it on OfferUp or anything like that. No, don't do that personal benefit thing and don't be like, you know what? I really think you need, I don't know what do people need. Can't even think of a scenario right now. You buy them something else that they don't need. Oh, I think, you know, it would be really nice if you had this drone. You know, it'll it's like drone camera or something like that. And you're like, this person, it would be really nice. It'll de-stress them when they play around with the drone. They don't need that. So you can only give them non-money if it will truly be helpful for that individual. Okay? So that's the criteria. And you can pay zakah in increments. And I spelled increments wrong. I just realized that right now. You can pay zakah in increments, but here's the catch. A lot of people do this. So they will pay, I'll pay your rent every month. But what they do is they wait until their zakah is due. And they're like, I have $4,000 zakah due. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start paying off your rent every month until it's paid off, let's say $1,000 a month. Your zakah is 4 months late by the time you've paid off the rent. What you should do, you should be paying 4 months before your due date. So by the time your due date comes, you've paid off all your zakah by your due date. So just make sure you don't make that mistake and you're paying late. So let's take a simple example, and this is the last slide. Your assets and your liabilities. Let's say you have $500 under your bed. You count it as zakah. You have $100 in your wallet. Look into it. You have $10,000 in your checking account. Your market value of your stocks is $5,000. The jewelry that you bought for sale or sitting in your, you know, safe deposit box is $1,000. Khalid, your friend, owes you $2,000 and you can collect it from him any time. Your liabilities, you owe John $5,000. Your past due rent is $1,000. Your electricity bill is $100 and it's been billed already, but you haven't paid it. You have gold value is $2,000 per ounce. You're determining what the nisab is, so let's say about $6,000. Subtotal, $12,500, you multiply by 2.5%. In a calculator, just for those of you who are mathematically challenged, you do times 0.025 or you do divided by 40 and it'll give you the number of $312.50. That's the amount of zakah that's due. That's how you calculate your zakah. And I'll take questions now, inshallah ta'ala. Yes.
If you have about
Oh, no. So nisab is the 85 grams of gold, about $6,000. The $13,000 was the United States poverty rate for an individual in 2023. I was just mentioning that as who can receive zakat. It's not about who's paying zakat. Okay.
Yusuf,
question.
You have two questions.
You need about $6,000 to pay zakat. So the
question is, let's say I have $6,000
and then a few months later, I lose all that money, then that's a great question, Yusuf. So a few months later, if you had the $6,000 and a few months later, you lose all of that money, right? Let's say you go all the way down to $1,000. You keep waiting until your zakat due date comes, 354 days later. If you get back above $6,000 again, you're still gonna pay zakat. If you're still below that amount after your zakat due date comes, if you're still below $6,000, then you're not paying zakat. Great question, actually. Yes. I don't know, but yeah.
Would you describe HSA as
I forgot how they function, so I have to look into them again. How do they function in a nutshell?
It's basically, you have heavily penalized if you don't use it for health insurance.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, you would count that as a, and you could potentially pull it out, right? And you're gonna be using it for, yeah, so you will count that as a savings, yeah, HSA. Yes.
What about real estate?
What about real estate? Oh yeah, I didn't cover
it.
Yeah, I forgot to cover real estate. Let me cover real estate real quick because I forgot. So real estate in a nutshell is your personal property that you own and you're living in, you don't pay zakat on it. Your rental property that you own and you're renting it out, you also don't pay zakat on the property. The money's going to come into your bank account that you're renting it out. You're going to be paying your expenses from, let's say, the same bank account. Whatever's left in there, you're paying zakat on the money that's left over. The real estate that you do have to pay on is if you flip homes. So if you buy homes and then you sell them, and this is your business and this is what you do, and the primary intention of buying that property was to sell it in, let's say, the short term, then you will be paying on the entire market value of the property. And the same thing applies to land. The same thing applies to burial plots. The same thing applies to vacation homes, et cetera, across the board.
Are there situations where there's a difference? For example, if someone has lots of homes, like let's say 10 homes, and they're investing the majority of their wealth in real estate, and then they only have like $10,000.
Yeah.
Would they not have to pay?
Yeah, so I know it seems almost like a zakat shelter. So let's say somebody owns 10 properties and they only have $10,000 in their account, and they're like, well, they keep on investing in these things. Technically, it's almost like a zakat shelter because so real estate has the potential to fluctuate between the two intentions. If you remember my vintage Ferrari example, it's the same thing. So you buy it for the purpose of renting out. So it's like a revenue producing business. It's like machinery that you buy for your business, right? So someone can have a massive business. They keep on buying these massive machines, millions of dollars, but they're not paying zakat on it because it's there to make their products. This is what a lot of companies do, like Tesla. One of the things they did was they invested so much of their money in infrastructure, developing supercharging stations all around the world. So when they look at their balance sheet, they're like, they don't seem like they have much money, but they're putting all their money into these future assets that are going to be there. Same thing applies to Amazon, did the same thing, right? So a lot of companies do that on purpose. So if somebody's doing that with real estate with the intention of avoiding zakat, you should be giving more. Anyway, if you're so wealthy, you should be giving more, right? But technically, from a technical perspective, zakat is not due on real estate, unless you're flipping the homes or you're selling the homes for the market value. Yeah.
Another question about stocks. So, is
zakat
imposed on stocks and supposed to sell? And is it after tax or before tax?
If you sell them? I don't understand the question.
$1,000
worth of stocks. Market value of the stocks is $1,000. Oh, and you sell it to pay the zakat. Yeah. Whatever's left Let's say you sell it and you have transaction fee and you have tax or whatever. Let's say the tax has been billed immediately, hypothetically. On the spot, whatever money you have left, you calculate the stocks that you didn't sell, market value, the stocks that you did sell, cash value, and then you do the 2.5% of that. Yeah, so let's say you own a gas station. Yeah, so the fuel that you own is something you're planning on selling. And you, if you already bought it and purchased it, you're going to be paying on that, yes. And the convenience store, all the stuff you have in the storage, hopefully halal stuff, then yes. Yeah.
And then do you pay on the market value cost of the station? Is that
a factor? No, you don't have to pay on the market value cost of the station. In terms of patents and goodwill on potential station and all that stuff, no. Because that's the building, and then you have a brand. You don't have to factor in the brand and all that stuff. You know about stocks?
Yeah, if they go below that, like let's say that in that 1 year, can you pay and do they go up? Can you pay it on the current value or do you have to recalculate?
So you mean if you have stocks and right before your zakah is due, the stocks fluctuate down below the nisab value?
Or within that year they went below?
Yeah, so stocks will always be fluctuating, right? Let's say you have $10,000 of stocks a year ago. In the middle of the year, it went down to $3,000. At the end of the year, it went back up to $12,000. You're going to pay zakah on $12,000. If it went down at the end of the year to $3,000, you're not paying zakah. If it went down to $9,000, you're paying zakah only on $9,000. You're paying zakah on the end amount.
So that 1 year, having the wealth holding up for 1 year,
this is the common question that people get confused about all the time. So they say, zakah is due on money that you've had for a year. And the answer is no. Let me rephrase it. Zakah is due on your money if you've been rich for a year. Did that rephrase it for you? Exactly. So basically, 1 year ago, if you were above nisab, now if you're above nisab, you're paying zakah on what you have now. Not on what you've had the entire time. Other questions? Yes. What's an example of what?
On the slide you said
uncollectible debt. So let's say you sold something and somebody owes you this money and you're like, okay, you can pay me in a month. Month comes by and you ask them, hey, it's been a month. Are you paying me? Oh, I don't have the money. Next month, can you pay me now? I don't have the money. When will you have the money? I don't know. That's uncollectible debt. Yeah. Yeah, so when it comes to homes or when it comes to basically any time you're going to get a giant lump sum of money for some reason, like let's say you sell a home. You sell a home and you're planning on buying another home in 6 months. Let's say you're doing a 1031 exchange or something like that. So you're going to have this lump sum sitting in cash. And if your zakat time comes and you're like, you know what? When I had the home, I didn't have to pay zakat on it. Now that I just sold it and I'm sitting on cash, but I'm looking for another house to buy within a few months, I'm going to have to pay zakah on this massive amount of cash. In this situation, what you can do is you calculate what's called a separate hawl for that amount of money. Hawl means passage of an entire lunar year. So because this is one rare lump sum of money that just came in and got converted for you, you will calculate a separate year, 354-day lunar year, for this amount of money. So like in the example of the home loan you're talking about, let's say you get $200,000 and you know this money's going specifically for something. That lump sum $200,000, let's say you have $87,000 in your bank account. And then you get let's say your family gives you a lump sum of $200,000 to buy a home. And you need to look for that home. It's gonna take you 3 months and your zakah is coming up. Calculate that $200,000 lump sum that they gave you as having its own 354-day lunar year period. And if it hasn't passed on it yet, if you spend that into a home, then you're not going to have to pay zakah on that money. Okay? Yusuf, go ahead. One more question. Great question, actually. So, it's a two-year-old kid who has $6,000. Does he need to pay zakat? So, according to the Hanafi school, he does not. According to all three other schools, he needs to pay zakat on that. I actually lean towards the opinion of the Hanafi school where he does not need to pay zakat on that, because it'll keep eating up his wealth. However, I'm really glad you brought this up. But what a lot of people do is they'll put money into their child's account. They'll put money into an account and they'll put their kid's name on it. And they say, you know what, here's $50,000 and I put Maryam and Yusuf's name on it too. And it's got my name on it. And be like, this is their money. I've intended that this money belongs to them. And therefore, according to this view, I do not need to pay zakat on this money because it's their money, it's not my money. Here's the simple test. If I am in need and something happens, like I absolutely need this money, can I withdraw this money and be like, sorry kids, I love you so much, but I'm taking your $50,000. Could I do that legally? If I could do that legally, then it's my money. It's not their money, and I have to pay zakat on it. If I cannot legally do that because I actually have a trust set up and there's a guardian over this money and I cannot touch this money at all because it doesn't belong to me legally, then I don't need to pay zakat on it. Okay, so there's a little trick that a lot of people do. They're like, this money has been reserved for my grandkids. It doesn't belong to me. It's like an envelope sitting in a drawer somewhere, like $500,000. No, that's your money. If you needed money, if you have the intention. Intention does not matter when it comes to money. Let me just explain that very clearly. Intention doesn't matter when it comes to money. It's like marriage and divorce. Intention doesn't matter. What matters is contracts. Your intention doesn't matter. If you go into business and you have a contract with someone, you'd be like, I signed this contract, but my intention was not to actually abide by these terms. No one cares about your niyyah. That's what the contract says. You have to follow the contract. When it comes to the zakat, it's the same thing. If the money belongs to you, your intention does not matter. If it belongs to someone else, your intention doesn't matter. What matters is the actual ownership of it. Okay? You had a question? He can always ask at home. He has unlimited access to me.
So the example you gave for someone who has a large amount in 401k, but a small amount in their just regular like liquid funds, is the recommendation, because the reality is, although the money is accessible to them in times of need, if they were to access it currently to pay zakat, they would pay very heavy penalty.
Absolutely.
So what is the recommendation?
I get this question all the time. The recommendation is if you have so much money in your 401k or your IRA and you don't have enough money in your checking account to pay off the zakat, stop putting so much money into your 401k. Don't max it every single year. You have to stop putting so much money in there and put money in your checking account so you can actually pay off your zakat. Now, if 1 year or 2 years, you didn't know this and you are delaying your zakah because you're going to be heavily, heavily penalized. Keep a track of that. And next year, stop putting so much money in there and back pay your zakah. You have a genuine reason for delaying your zakah payment. But if this continues perpetually, this happens to a lot of people. They're like, but I can never pay off my retirement account because I don't have enough money. Stop putting so much money into your retirement account. The perfect example is like this. Let's say somebody, every year, they're putting money into a safe, and they lock it and they dig underneath their backyard and they like bury it all the way down in like under a bomb shelter or something. And they're like, it's so hard for me to get that money out. And every year I keep putting money, I don't have money to pay my zakat. It's so hard for me to get it out. It's like, stop burying so much money then. Bury the amount of money that you'll be able to pay off, right? So that's what's supposed to be done, inshallah. And in that case, you have a legitimate reason for delaying your zakat until you readjust the amount that you're putting, because it's a common problem. Yeah. So when it comes to 401k, let's say it massively tripled, whatever it would be, try to liquidate other assets to pay off your 401k, to pay off your zakat as much as possible. If it's really, really challenging, they're like, you know what, we're going to charge you 40% penalty or whatever it may be or something like that. Try to borrow money from your friends and family and say, listen, I want to borrow money from you. I make a good amount of money. Look how much money I have in my 401k. I'm a safe investment, you know. Just let me borrow the money so I can pay off my zakah and then keep on trying to pay all that money back as soon as possible, right? As, you know, one person, subhanAllah, Dr. Mazamul Siddiqui, he's one of the senior scholars. He gets questions like this. And one day I was sitting in his office. He's a very funny guy. He's a very good sense of humor. If you know him on a personal level. So he said, sometimes people come to me with zakah questions and they explain zakah in such a way that they're like, you know, but I have so much money in my 401k and it's going to cost so much. Like they present themselves like you start feeling sorry for them as if you want to give your zakat to them. You know, like, they're like, but it's so much money of zakat. And then he's like, one day he's like, I got so frustrated with one person. He's like, you know what you should do? So the best solution for you is you should make dua that Allah not test you with so much money. That's your solution. Allah just giving you so much money, it's bothering you so much that you have so much zakah. Just ask Allah to give you less money so you have to pay less zakah and you feel better about yourself. And this is like, just be cautious about that. Don't end up becoming one of those people who's like, but it's so much zakah. That's because you have so much money. That's why you have so much zakah to pay. You know, alhamdulillah. Yeah, question.
So if you own a home, the value of the home has gone up, do you pay zakat on that, or is it like similar to the Ferrari example?
So if you own a home, even if it's building up equity, you're not paying on your personal home.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Unless you bought it with the intention of resale, like quick resale.
Yeah.
Yes. Great question. So, like Yusuf's question. So, if the money goes down below $6,000, and then on your zakah due date, it doesn't go back above the nisab, it's still below $6,000, and then you wait like another 6 months, and then it finally gets back above nisab, do you pay zakah immediately, or do you get another whole year before you pay your zakah? You get another whole year. So, the point is that you're supposed to have enough money where you get an opportunity of a year to be investing your money so that it's your zakah is not eating up. So this is mercy from Allah. So yeah, you mark a new day and you have another whole year to wait to see if you're still above nisab. Okay. Yes.
This is five things that
God
sees on this is something. So at the end of the year.
Sorry, repeat that again.
If you file your taxes,
yeah.
Right, so this is part of what you're gonna have to pay zakah on. And if you add to it the non-taxable assets that you have, and you do 2.5%, am I missing something here? Is that correct or not?
You're saying paying your zakat with your taxes?
No. So basically,
you're saying deducting your taxes that are coming up.
Not really. Like to figure out amount of money, the taxable, the zakat eligible money that you have.
Zakat eligible money and taxable money is different because taxes are income and zakat is savings.
Yeah, but when you look at the end of the year, you're filing your taxes, and this is how much money I paid.
No, not at all. Because the amount that you pay your taxes on is the amount that you made. It doesn't matter how much you have left in the bank. And it doesn't calculate previous years. Your taxes don't consider previous years that have been sitting in your bank account. And your taxes don't consider how much money you spent. So taxes are completely different from zakat calculations. They almost have nothing to do with each other. The only thing you can talk about taxes is that if at the end of the year, your tax season's coming up, and your taxes are due, but you haven't paid them, but you know you're going to have to pay them, you can subtract them if you can calculate exactly what they are, because they've already been billed, technically you owe the government, you can subtract that from your amount when calculating your final amount of zakat. Okay, yes. Yeah, so stocks which are part of your compensation, if they're vested, you have to pay zakah on them. If they're unvested, you don't need to pay zakah on them. So unvested means that if you leave the company right now, you will not get those stocks, so they don't belong to you. If they're vested, they belong to you, so you have to pay on them because they're your money. Yeah.
needs it. How do you establish and ask them enough questions to know that they
need? Great. So how do you figure out if someone is really in need? How many questions do you ask them? You basically use your best judgment by neither asking too much nor investigating too little. There's no formula for it. You just kind of, you kind of figure, you know, just you look around, what kind of car do they drive? What kind of, you ask maybe a few of their friends, you know, what do they have a job? What kind of family do they have? What does it seem like? Do they seem like they're genuinely in need? You know, if they're driving, you know, some expensive car, or they're like, you know, you see that they have a lot of money for some reason, then you'd be like suspicious, right? So, you know, usually if they appear to be at some level to be in need, you can safely assume for the most part that it's okay to give it to them. Yes.
Okay, so to make sure I'm tracking, so you would pay 2.5% of your current total amount minus the fees if you were to take it out today?
That's the opinion of some scholars. My opinion is that you don't subtract the fees, that you would take it out today, because you're probably not going to take it out. So your money keeps growing on non-subtracted taxes and non-subtracted fees in your retirement account. So you will pay zakat on your actual retirement account market value. Unless you're buying a home this year, within the next few months, and you're taking it out, that may be a different scenario. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you please repeat the like mechanism of how do you pay early zakat and like how do you
pay early zakat? I have an article on my website, askthescholars.com, but super short answer is, let's say you pay $200 zakat 3 months early. And now what you do is you look at how much money you have in your account. So let's say you have $9,800 in your account. Because you paid the $200, it got subtracted. You add $200 back to the $9,800, and now you have $10,000. Now you do 2.5% of that. Figure out what the zakat is, and the $200 that you paid, subtract that, and the rest that you have to pay that much zakat left. Got it? Anything else? All right, we'll leave it at that. Great questions, and may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us to be among the people who pay our zakah correctly and properly, and teach this information and this knowledge to other people who need it. Ameen. Subhanakallahumma bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant. Astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.